Welcome to No Sugar,
Just Spice.
I'm Sheer.
And I'm Sen.
1, 2, 3, hi. Okay, I think that was good.
As we navigate the early stages of our careers, we wanted to bring you a weekly dose of our unapologetic dialogue.
I was like, ha 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 ha.
Oh yeah.
No.
Join us every week as we dive into topics on all of our minds and cover all the latest trends, obsessions, and struggles we encounter on the daily.
We're getting personal and professional, and we're here to talk about it all. No sugarcoating, no BS, just a little bit of Middle Eastern spice.
Get ready for an authentic exploration of all the highs and lows, because life's too short for sugar-coated stories. This is No Sugar, Just Spice, where honesty meets the mic. Hello, everyone. Welcome back.
Hey, welcome to our first interview.
We're really excited. This is a very exciting episode. We've been talking about having guests for a while, and this guest is particularly special and close to my heart. And if you've been listening to the podcast, you know that he's like probably the person I quote the most on here. So he was definitely like the first person that I wanted on to kind of break the ice and start this kind of transition into interviewing and bringing other people on. So I'm super excited.
So without further ado, today we have joining us Elon Sevier, the man behind the brand Elon.
Welcome.
Welcome, Elon. Well,
thank you. Thank you for having me. I feel very important to be here.
He's also Sanaya's dad.
Yes. Elon, also known as Pops to me.
So yeah, I love this podcast of you guys. I think you guys do a great job. And I'll tell you, every time I listen to it, it's hard to believe that it's actually my daughter. Like, you know what I mean? That like, no, because you guys are so smart and so
nice.
Well articulated. And it's like, when I hear it, I'm very impressed.
Aww.
And it's just, it's amazing. I have to keep reminding myself, hey, that's your daughter. That's pretty cool.
Sanaya, I'm going to cry.
I know, I'm going to cry too. Well, a lot of what I speak about is stuff that I've learned from you, believe it or not. So, but I totally understand when I listened to that podcast that you were on, it was also weird for me to think that, like, especially if you were talking about me, I was like, that's so weird.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Every time you say my dad, and I'm like, wait a minute, that's me.
That's me. I love it.
That's what Elliot told us the other day, is like, you always mention me and Sugi. I feel so special.
I know. That was so cute. If only Sugi would listen. Okay.
But today we're very excited. Elon is a leader in the women's fashion industry. His journey is really a testament to the power of blending traditional business principles with all these cutting edge strategies that make him really a beacon for the next generation of entrepreneurs, which is why we really wanted to have him on board today and share his wisdom and his feedback with all of us. So from, you know, his humble beginnings to building a successful brand, he really has been pushing the boundaries over the past few decades and redefined what it means to succeed in today's fast-paced world, especially in the retail industry. So we're very excited, Elon, to have you on and to ask you some questions to learn more about your journey and how you got to where you are today.
Fire away.
Feel free to just, you know, be relaxed. Like, this is just a normal conversation between friends. And it's not like super formal or anything. So we like, okay. That's how we like to do things around here.
Okay.
Let's bring it all the way back. Let's start at the beginning. So we want to hear, I guess, give people like a little bit of context of, you know, like where Elon started and just like a brief synopsis of like where it started from an idea to now.
You know, we've spoken about this before. Mm-hmm. So what we do is more of what I would call like an old school business. You know what I mean? It's not like what you have today, which is technology and things of that nature that I guess you need certain skills to get into.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously everything needs skills. So I moved into this country. The last time we moved into this country, I was about 16. And I always had, you know, jobs as a kid. If you would ask me what I wanted to be, I wanted to be an architect, I wanted to be a lawyer, I wanted to be a restaurant owner. Like, you know, every time I met somebody that I liked what they had, like I thought, you know, that would be a good thing for me to pursue. That's kind of how I always looked for outside role models. And we moved to Florida when I was about 16 and a half. And I got a job at a clothing store. And the plan was to go to high school, go to college, but decide, you know, I actually did enter college just like a community college with the thought of, I'll do the first 2 years and then I'll figure out what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is I knew I was going to start working, and I figured if the work career thing works out, then I don't need to continue the school. But if it doesn't work out, at least I didn't waste time and I still had the school done. Like I didn't waste years of having to start over. But very quickly, I started working with some people that had clothing stores. And these were not regular clothing stores. These were like clothing souvenir stores for tourists in Fort Lauderdale Beach, I guess back in the late 80s.
The ones where you go and like buy t-shirts from?
You buy t-shirts. Yeah, it was the craziest. I mean, I didn't start there. I started at like a higher end clothing store that my parents' friends owned, and I worked for them. But then some other friend told me you can make a lot of money with these beach stores because it was seasonal. And I'll never forget the first day I worked there. I think this was like before the 90s even. One day in a store in spring break selling t-shirts, this store did like $30,000.
Wow.
Imagine back
and,
then.
And when I saw that, back then an engineer was making $30,000 a year.
That's insane.
A year. And I'm thinking to myself, wow. Am I stupid? Am I going to go to school now to be an engineer? And this guy can hardly speak English. He has a business that's doing $30,000 in a day.
Wow.
Now, obviously, they weren't doing this every day of the year. But for me, it was a very big eye-opener.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, as a kid, my vision of what success, and it starts off at $500 a week. Then it goes to $1,000 a week. Then you hear somebody's making $10,000 a week. So it's like your perception changes, you know what I mean, as you get older. And that was a real shocker to my perception. And then at the same time, everybody that I knew was either had a clothing store, had a clothing brand, had a fabric company, had a factory, had something to do in the garment industry back then. Now, today, obviously, it's people doing different things, but I'd like to focus going back to that old school because I think, like, you know, we always talk, like young people today, they always, everything looks super complicated to them of how to get there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But really, it's not so complicated. Really, I mean, you need to know what you want and then attach yourself to that environment. And again, like I always tell you, you want to own a restaurant, go work at a restaurant, even if you work there for free, but you're learning something.
We talk about this all the time. Like if you want to enter an industry, go be an intern, get experience.
And you know what? Sometimes if you stand out in that industry, like if you're not just going to a 9-to-5 job, like you're really passionate about it, I think the owner of that business will recognize it because the owners of the business also need people to grow. I know so many people that started working as an employee at a store or at a restaurant or whatever. And today they own their own stores and their own restaurants, and they started partnering up with the person they work for.
Yeah, every opportunity leads to another one or another connection, which is super important.
It's really about proximity. You need to put yourself within where you need to be. Now, of course, if you're going to be a lawyer or doctor or an engineer or whatever, there's no route here for you. You have to go through school. But even after the school in those businesses, it's also important which environment you're in and how quickly you excel.
Yeah, so we want to get into advice for, you know, young entrepreneurs and Gen Z and millennials. But let's stay on topic here and focus on like the history of where like the brand started. Like where did the idea for starting your own brand come from? And like how did those early days look like, I guess?
So again, like I said, I was surrounded by that. You know, my goal was to be successful or to make money, if you call it. Mm-hmm. And mom's parents were in that industry also. It's like that was what impressed them, is people that were successful in this industry. I always say this, it's funny, but I kind of did this to impress mom.
Yeah.
I think it's
Gali, you are the muse behind Elon, the brand.
It's so funny, but it's true. So
I'll show you. A friend of mine just sent me this. This is a friend of mine from my childhood, and he lives in Texas today. And he sent me this business card. This was my first business card.
Wow. No way.
Yeah.
This is vintage right here.
What year did you make this?
This is like 1990.
Wow.
Now, by the way, when I had this business card, I didn't even have one dress. I didn't have anything. I just made the business card and I was...
That's crazy.
Fake it till you make it.
I can't believe somebody held on to this. Shout out to that person. That's super cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really good friend.
Billy Schwartz.
Believed in you.
I'll send him the podcast.
Yeah, you should.
So basically, I used to watch my father-in-law used to have a store, and then he used to make his own stuff like in his garage. And when I used to see him, what he's doing, like all of a sudden makes it like reality to you. You know, you see he buys fabric, he's cutting it, sending it to somebody to sew it, and then he's putting it in the store.
He's still doing it, by the way.
He's still doing it. Yeah, he's still doing it.
In his 80s.
So what I did is I ended up, you know, gathering a couple of $1,000s from my mom. And I went partners with this guy that I used to work for in Coconut Grove, Simon. So he put in $2,000 and we decided to go for an adventure.
Dad, how old were you at this time?
I was 20, 21.
So it's like right around the time you met mom in the beginning.
Well, no, mom I met at like 19. Yeah, this was around 21, maybe 22 even.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Somewhere around there.
So you decided after you finished high school to basically go straight into starting your own business.
No. I worked for this guy, Simon. Then I worked for these other people in Fort Lauderdale. And then I went back to Simon with the idea to start this. And Simon was the only person I knew that would have any money willing to try something with me. So I had an idea of making some dresses that I knew I used to sell very well in the higher end. And I knew if I make something like that, back then it was like these very provocative dresses. It was kind of, that was the Married with Children era. I don't know if you guys remember that girl.
The bubblegum dresses, right?
The bubblegum dresses and dresses with holes in them and all kinds of stuff. That was very, very early 90s, you know,
I love big hair
and tight dresses. So I thought, you know, I'll go make these dresses and I'll sell them back to the resort beach people because people go out, they want to go to clubs and whatever. So I thought it was fine. So I asked who sells fabric. I found out who sells fabric. I went, I bought a bunch of fabric. Not a bunch, I bought like 10 rolls. Had them standing in the house. Then after that, the fabric guy asked him, do you know anybody who can make a pattern? And he gave me a number. And then the pattern maker, I asked him, do you know who can sew this? And we kind of went along. And, you know, I remember the first mistake is I called this place to do the cutting for me. And they asked me, what is the cuttable width of the fabric? And then I looked at the fabric and I realized that I have 10 or 12 rolls and each one is a different height.
Oh, God.
That was the first day I realized when you buy something fabric, you have to buy it all kind of the same.
Oh, my God.
So, but that's how you learn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So you were doing this all, it was just you pretty much.
It was me with, Simon was kind of like the investor.
Yeah.
And Simon was very protective of his $2,000 investments. Everything had to be under his control and all that. And then I headed up to the like Daytona. We made like 200 dresses. I put them in the car, went up to Daytona, stopped at the first store, walked in, hi, this, that, and got somebody to buy it. And then they recommended me to another store. It was Israelis a lot in that industry back then. So it was like, and they would invite you all of a sudden to dinner, and at dinner you met the other people and they're like, oh yeah, come tomorrow. And before you know it, you're in.
It's crazy.
And you always had the idea to do wholesale. You never wanted to sell directly to the end customer.
There was no end customer.
Yeah, sure. What is it? No, what are you talking about? There was only stores.
No, like start your own store and sell directly to the client.
No, because there was more potential of growth on a wholesale is kind of unlimited. I mean, you can sell to a million stores. Where you have one store, I wouldn't go about producing for my own store. I'd be better off buying from other places.
You probably also need more money for that, more capital to start with.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Or you definitely need some more capital for that. So that's how it started. Came back, made another batch, went out there again. And that went on for about a good 6-7 months. And I started meeting up with another company called SurfStyle. So I used to see them on the beach. I used to be on the beach with my bag of stuff and he was on the beach with his bag of shorts.
History right here.
Yeah.
Israeli history in the early 90s.
And we became very good friends. And quickly I saw an opportunity of where they had money. I mean, they were also in the beginning and they needed some talent. And they saw me as talent, even though I didn't think I had any talent. But, you know, till today, I don't think I have any, but I do have a good eye for things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I'm not... People use the word designer. I'm definitely not a designer. I'm more of a creative director. Like I know
a visionary,
the direction, and I know. But yeah, the word designer, sometimes it's thrown at me and I'm never comfortable with it because I'm not really leading anything. I just have a good eye for what people want.
I mean, you're putting together.
You're a visionary. You're putting together collections. And a salesperson.
So I ended up parting with Simon, and I ended up partnering with Surfside.
So how did you part with your first investor? Did you give him the money back?
It was just not working. It was just not working. He wasn't very open and easygoing. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, you know, one of the reasons a lot of people ask me, why did I call the company Elon?
Yeah, that was one of our questions.
And that was the main reason was I knew that this partnership is not going to be forever. You know what I mean? And I knew from working in a store, I have a very good friend of mine, Tony Raz. Tony Raz ended up being my brother-in-law later in life. Now he's not anymore, but still a wonderful, wonderful guy. But he used to sell us clothing at the store I was working at. And the name of the clothing was Raz. And I always, like, I love the fact that I know him. You know what I mean? Like, if a customer came in and I sold, I would like to sell the Raz. And I love the fact that I knew him, that he was nice to me.
And everybody loved him too.
Yeah. So I loved associating that. So I figured if the name
is
Elon.
That's like the beginning, like the early days of like emotional connection to brands.
Yeah.
Brands look for that emotional connection all the time.
Yeah. But imagine you're working in a store and the brand you're selling, the guy comes once a week and is nice to you and teaches you. And so, you know what? Actually, I'm forgetting a big piece. So after Simon, I didn't go to Surfstyle. I went to Tony.
Oh, right.
Tony Raz took me in. That was an adventure of about 6-7 months. I saw Raz as this big company that I couldn't believe I was going to be a part of. But once I was in, I realized that the company was on the verge of collapse.
Oh, no.
And it was only people looking for money.
But it's crazy how much Tony influenced you, because that you really like manifested. Oh,
Tony was like a real idol to me.
Yeah.
Like Tony was really, I mean, yeah, I love him till today.
That lesson of like, you know, him representing the brand and people being excited when he came in because he was likable and people were like, could associate him.
Oh, he was,
you totally
he was a superstar.
Took that, like that is who you are. And that's like when we go to trade shows and stuff, like people are so excited to see you every single time. Like it's because they associate you with the name, and it's crazy that you like manifested that so early on.
So that I definitely have to give 100% credit to Tony.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's like there is, you know, it's been so many years. So there is that gap between Simon to Surfstyle of Tony. But Tony and I were such close friends out of all this that when the opportunity to go in with Surfstyle came about, he was very welcoming to it. Like he knew that that was good for me and he, you know what I mean? And of course, later down the road, he ended up marrying a mom's sister.
Mm-hmm. It's so crazy how life works out.
Yeah. So I was with Tony, and with Tony, I really thought I made it until I found out that, you know, maybe things are not as such, but they had a huge warehouse with huge capabilities. Like I could have done whatever I wanted. I got connected with fabric people that I didn't have before. There was a company called Richland Mills in Miami, Mr. Wolf, very, very successful man. And he took a liking to me too. And I became kind of close with them. So they would give me credit and stuff like that. And then when I moved in with Surfstyle, Surfstyle was a small company that had a very hot item of shorts. And they took me in. It was two partners. And then came the next 10 years I was with them. And those were some wild 10 years. I mean, So Surfstyle, basically, I was the creative director, if you would, for Surfstyle. I wasn't partners in Surfstyle. They were my partner. And everything we did together. If it's the catalog, it would be one side Elon, one side Surfstyle. If it was the booth, it would be booth. This side is Surfstyle, this side is Elon.
For everyone listening, by the way, this is like crazy because like we also grew up with the Surfstyle people. So it's crazy to see how connected this whole community
is. I always say that there should be a movie about this era, like Israeli immigrants in Miami, taking over Miami in the 90s.
That's a whole... Surfstyle is a whole other
animal.
It's a major success story.
Yeah.
I mean, beyond.
Honestly, we should have them on one time if we can.
It depends who, though, because there's different branches of that. But yeah, definitely you could.
So basically, you had like this catalog book and you would always split everything you did, basically.
Everything we did was together. But my ideas, I would give, if it belonged on the men's or Surfstyle side, I would give it to them. And kind of like, and then I had my own little side thing.
But it's smart that you, like, even though you were working with people that were bigger than you, you held on to your own brand and your own name.
Well, that was kind of where my income was coming from. This is where, you know, maybe I wasn't, if I had to go back and do it again today, I would have demanded a salary or a percentage or something for my work that I was doing at Surfstyle.
Right. No, but yeah. But still.
And if I would have done that, you know what I mean? I had years of regret for not doing that. But again, I was just a kid happy that they're keeping me around. So
you're
happy to be involved. I was just happy that they're still letting me come to work here every day.
No, but you could have just like worked for them and given them all the ideas and, you know, the credit.
No, but I could have done both. I could have gotten compensated for what I was doing for them. And I think if I would have, looking back at it in hindsight, they would have appreciated it more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when people get something for free, they don't necessarily appreciate it. But anyway, Surfstyle came up with, there was an item, you know, they had this jacket, which I'm sure everybody knows what it is, or you can Google it. And back then,
the windbreaker jacket.
Back then, yeah, the windbreaker jacket. Stores used to put a heat transfer on it that was basically illegal. It was a heat transfer that said Oakley. And when you married that windbreaker with the word Oakley that said Oakley thermonuclear protection, okay? And we made these windbreakers that were like iridescent.
And people still wear them today, by the way.
They were blowing out of the stores in rates that were, you couldn't even imagine, but it was illegal. So stores were getting busted, like, you know, like FBI would come and remove it. And it was like totally tied into the fact of how this product is moving. And one day I got an envelope in the mail from some insurance company, and the word insurance had an S in it that looked kind of like it belongs on the Oakley logo.
Ooh.
And I thought to myself, wait a minute, you know what I mean? People don't know what the hell Oakley is. You know what I mean? They just like the whole look, the future and the iridescent and the windbreaker. And I sat there in my kitchen and I drew up the new Surfstyle logo that looks like Oakley. And instead of thermonuclear protection, I came up with some words, interplanetary body gear. And
and the Israelis were probably like, whoa, what is that? Listen,
this was, I think, the biggest claim to fame from back then, because what that did, it turned everything legal and it turned into branding the brand, and all the competition that were copying us had to have that transfer to sell. Otherwise, they wouldn't buy from them. It created a huge success. A success, I think, that back in those years, the amounts of money that they sold.
And they're still selling it, right?
They're still selling it, but today it's, you know, it made like a comeback because it's like retro.
Yeah, it's more like a vintage item.
But I'll tell you, that logo is still the logo that they use till today. I mean, that's still the logo on the buildings and the logo and everything else. I think for those 10 years, with this whole story that I'm telling you, we were like the hottest thing that ever existed in that beachwear industry because of that logo and because of that jacket. Like, we used to go to these shows like superstars, like, you know what I mean? People would really line up. So that created a really amazing foundation.
But how old were you during the saga?
This was between 24 to 35.
And at this point, you're working with Surfstyle for about 2 years at this point, right?
No, three years. But total with Surfstyle, I was 11 years. During those 11 years, I got married, Sanaya was born, you know, Leia was born.
But during that first 2-3 years, you said you weren't getting paid.
I actually never got paid from Surfstyle. Like, all my income was coming.
That's my question. Like, your experience, like the whole journey, like, it was for experience and brand awareness for Elon. That's what you were doing it for.
No, they were my partners. They were my partners.
So were they getting a cut from Elon?
Yeah. 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 They invested in Elon. All the money I needed to make Elon work, they invested. They also did everything that they were doing accounting wise, or, you know, customer service and all the stuff that Surfstyle had, I had.
Wow, that was great. You got a whole company basically to help you run the business.
But you weren't making any money?
I was making money from the Elon side. I had 50% and they had 50%. I was making a salary and getting, you know,
got it.
At the end of the year, profits, and that's it. But I never got paid commission for my ideas on Surfstyle. I never got a salary from Surfstyle.
It's interesting. I've never heard of like a the situation where they invest and they give you access to their operations, their resources, their team, their talent. That makes a lot of sense. And I think they're great partners and investors for doing that. But I've never heard of a founder working for the investor's company and not getting anything.
You know why? Because it was kind of all one business and it didn't matter. Again, like I told you, I was just, the thought of me succeeding in anything was not in my, you know what I mean? I didn't think it was going to happen.
Yeah.
So the fact that I could have attached myself into some environment that was already successful, that was huge for me. You know what I mean? And I just knew if I stick around, I'll end up being successful.
They gave you opportunity and resources. And that, honestly, that in itself is worth it.
Well, yes. But let me tell you something. Bottom line, while we were doing that, they were expanding with somebody else just like me into retail stores. So meaning they had the wholesale and then they had retail. And then there was another guy like me with stores in Miami and another guy like me with stores in North Florida. And then they started with another guy like me in Palm Beach. And they started branching out to where I was just one of the partners, where they had multiple partnerships. And that's kind of the reason we ended up parting, is because at some point, I didn't feel like it was a fair deal for me. And at that point, it would have been too late to go back and start compensating me. And the environment, we partied a lot. It was very dynamic. But at some point, it became, I wouldn't call it toxic, but it became too much. You know what I mean? Like it became, you know what I mean? And you grow up, you're married, you have kids, your dynamic changes and your needs
change. Your goals change. I think you really like milked the situation for what it was and got what you needed from it. And then you were like, okay, time for the next step, which is like,
it gave him a start that he needed.
So I ended up going on my own.
But question, when you went on your own, they're still investors technically.
No, so we parted. We had other things between us, like a property or whatever that we kind of divided up. I kept the whole company. I moved on. I got my own warehouse.
Wait, just really quick before you move on to that, I just want to like point out, because I think there's like a very important lesson in this whole like Surfstyle phase, which is if your personality was different, like, and you were kind of like, oh, I'm better than these people. And like, you know, you had kind of this like, cockiness, like you could have easily been like, screw these people, like they're not giving me anything. This is my brand. I'm better than them. Because a lot of people have that. And then you wouldn't have had the experience that you did with Surfstyle that got you to the next step. And like, I think that's something you've always taught us, is like, be humble and open to every experience you're in. Like, you're not too good for any job. Like, you can always learn from other people. And I think that's super helpful.
Until today, I'm still looking to learn from other people.
That doesn't change.
So, and I'll tell you, I was known, like nobody knew the dynamic of who's partners with who. It was very confusing for people. Everybody thought that I was Surfstyle. You know what I mean? Like everybody knew me as Elon Surfstyle.
Yeah, they literally had it on their warehouse in Hollywood for years until recently.
For years. Even 10 years after I left them, the Elon and the Surfstyle logos were still on the warehouse.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? On the highway?
Yes, I know exactly which warehouse. Yeah.
So I went on my own. And by the way, not even a month after I separated, they stopped their wholesale business. And they basically went full on just their own retail stores, and that took
not selling to other stores.
They kind of basically got more into the real estate side and their own stores, and they basically shut down the wholesale department. And again, because I do think I was a big driver,
because you were the head of wholesale operations for 10 years.
Yeah,
and
I wouldn't call it the head of operations, but
operations.
And we went through the heydays of where we were like the number one thing that ever existed. And then it started, you know what I mean, slowly going down. But thank God they made enough money with that to move on to retail and to real estate and to other things. And today, I mean, they are hugely successful, like in areas that you can't even imagine. I mean, they're a real massive company with all credit due to, you know, to the generation that took it there. We're still very good friends and they're still clients and we're still go to each other's events and weddings. And, you know, they're a big chapter in my life.
For sure. Wow.
So when I moved on my own, I quickly learned that I might be good at some things, but I'm definitely not good at the other stuff. And that's something very important to know too. You need to know what you don't know, and you need to hire people that do those parts better than you, or either partner with them or hire them. It's very important because a lot of people think they can do everything better than the next person, but you can't. If you're a talent, you're a talent. If you're a manager, you're a manager. If you are, you know, a money man, you're a money man. You can't be all of those things. So it didn't take long. It was about 7-8 months. And I started looking for some investor or somebody to come in because it was not headed in the right direction. And I had a customer named Flirt up in Cocoa Beach, Cape Canaveral, who was in a similar situation to me. He almost lost his business like at some point, and he took in a partner. When I mentioned it to him, he said that that partner is looking for a business to invest in for his daughter, because his daughter is finishing college and he wanted to start some business. So this guy was Terry, and Terry came in, put money in it, and he took care of all the financial side. He was basically the CFO. And I kept running with what I was doing, and we started growing. We got back on our feet. You know what I mean? We went from like 1 million to 2, from 2 to 4, from 4 to 6. And we kept evolving and evolving. Noemi came into the picture very quickly after college. And Noemi is still a partner here today.
Wait, Noemi is Terry's daughter?
Terry's daughter.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And Jeremy is Terry's son. So,
okay.
So here we went. We had a really nice, steady path. You know, we got to this level, we went to the next level. We got to this level, And you listen, a CFO or somebody that's managing the money is very important, because people make money, they spend money, and then there's no money to continue the business for next year. Or if you're growing, you know, you need more money to support the growth. I learned a lot from this guy. He was exactly what I needed at the time. His focus was more family. And, you know, I learned from him to go like on trips, like all these trips that we do. You know, I couldn't do them in Surfstyle. Surfstyle, if I left for 2 days, even when Galit gave birth to Sanaya, they were like, "What? Where are you going? What are you doing? We have a show." I'm like, "Who gives a shit about your show now?" You know what I mean? He was the exact...
No paternity leave.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like it was like that. Like it was like you couldn't breathe without somebody like, "Where are you? What are you doing?"
You had priorities in order.
The priority was... He taught me that the best thing you could spend your money on is to take your kids on trips. And really, we did that throughout, you know, the last 15 years, 20 years. We've done just that, you know, go on big trips, go on a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I really thank him for that part.
Yeah.
So anyway, the business grew. When we started, and also when I left Surfstyle, we were basically a beachwear or resortwear kind of company. And at some point, he told me, you know, bottom line is we're making money between January to June, and then we lose money till December, and then we make money again. So we needed to kind of change it up and start making year-round things. We needed to start selling people that were not just on the coastline. And we slowly started making like some winter stuff. And then the winter stuff got us new clients, and those clients now wanted spring stuff and summer stuff. And we kept evolving. Mm-hmm. That created amazing growth, and it started to create a brand in a way. You know what I mean? Because now you are in stores. You're not just famous on the beach. So today, just to speed that up a little bit, we've come full circle to now where we have a spring, summer, fall, winter, holiday, just like any other ready-to-wear company where we pre-sell stuff and all that. And we also have a dedicated resort line, because that is still what we're known for. So we are featured in like Nordstrom in the resort department, everything but water. Those are areas where specifically resort business comes from. And so most ready-to-wear companies don't necessarily have another resort. So it's like we're basically running two businesses. One is the resort and one is the ready-to-wear, but they kind of go together. And then to speed it up even further, Terry passed away 8 years ago. Very shockingly, mm-hmm. and kind of left us with a big
hole to
gap
fill.
Here
yeah.
of what to do. Major. And, you know, we got into like a certain peak at the time where, you know, you get to certain places, you know, nobody thinks what you're doing wrong when you're growing. You know what I mean? But when you stop growing, then you start realizing all the things you did wrong, but you couldn't do anything about it because you were growing. So time came to change. And then he passed away, and it was not an easy time. But again, I was fortunate to find somebody to replace the CFO, COO kind of position. And I was very, very fortunate to meet an amazing guy who's still with us now, named Mark. And 2 years after that, or a year, Corona hit, and you know, everything kind of changed. But we were able to implement the changes. We were able to come out the other side. And during Corona, the most exciting part is that we launched the e-com business, which is where, you know, what
Sanaya comes in and where we talk about all the time.
Yeah. People are familiar with that.
And this is the side of the business the audience knows about.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's it. I gave you the long version of the story, I feel.
Elon, you are an incredible storyteller. You answered almost all of our questions without us even having to ask them.
Yeah, exactly. That's which is always
go ahead, fire away.
How has the industry in your eyes changed then from 30 years ago versus today? And do you think that it's easier or harder today for aspiring entrepreneurs who want to enter this space, specifically in retail, with that difference?
I think to enter this space shouldn't be any more difficult than it was. And again, bottom line, it boils down to, you know, to an idea. I mean, you see these brands come out every other day, like Skims or whatever, that come up with something new that they find there is a need for. There is online brands that make men's t-shirts. They're just making men's t-shirts better than anybody else or cooler than anybody else. And it kind of opens the door. So I think it's just as easy. I mean, I think today also, I mean, look, bottom line is, if the only difference is, I would tell you, is 35 years ago, you could knock on any door in Hialeah and it would be a factory or somebody cutting or somebody. It was very accessible. All that industry went away, you know, because they did this NAFTA with Mexico. And I remember at some point they packed up all these machines and all these factories and they all moved to Mexico. We were one of the last ones to actually keep a factory till last year, where we kept a factory here for the last 30 years. We had cutting machines, we had sewing, we had all that stuff. But it just became less and less needed because we were really producing here less than 10% of what we do. And then keeping all these employees and all this space and all these machines, that 10%, I could have easily just imported it as well. And that's what we ended up doing.
So the biggest difference is that a lot of this labor workforce has just moved overseas.
Yes. But again, maybe it's not in Miami, but this labor does still very much exist in LA. And also today it's very easy to produce something in China or, you know, in 100%. Asia or whatever.
Globalization.
Yeah.
Globalization has made it a ton. I mean, we have tons of friends that do drop shipping, work on Amazon stores.
If you know how to work that system, I mean, you don't need to go to walk into somewhere in Hialeah and buy fabric and do it. You can just communicate with a factory through Alibaba and produce 60 pieces of something and start that way. And I do get phone calls from a lot of people that want to start something and whatever. And, you know, where I can help them, I help them. You know, I encourage that. A lot of people have an idea, but they have no concept of what the steps are. So they think, okay, I have to make a sample. And I'm like, okay, so you'll make the sample and then what? And then what are you going to do with it? You're going to go show it. And then if you sell it, what are you going to do then? And then, you know what I mean? So there is, you know, you got to help people see the whole picture.
There's a lot of new brands that are constantly emerging, like you said, and we're starting to see a lot of creator-led brands from celebrities, and I mean, that's a whole other world, but
yeah,
because so many brands come and go, what do you think the Elon brand has been doing right to make it still relevant 30 years later?
Yeah, that's my biggest question.
So that is a big question. Look, we are not an expensive brand, but we're also not a cheap brand, okay?
Which is a hard place to be.
We are like the higher of, we're like the high of the low, put it that way. So we sit in that nice spot between $75 to $150 retail. And I think our strength is that we know our client, like we know our girl, like what she likes to wear. And I think between myself and my wife and our other team members and my daughters that we have a good eye for what's in and what's stylish and what, you know, people will look good in. And at the end of the day, when you have a loyal client, a loyal clientele, which is, that's the hard part, is to keep the client loyal. And that you do by great service and by going above and beyond for the customer. Over 30 years, we've captured a clientele that is loyal. You know what I mean? They could buy this from somebody else or that from somebody else, but there is relationship and there is history and there is, you know what I mean? And That's something you have to build. That's not something you're going to get out of day one. Yeah. You could start up a company and spend money on ads and sell online and be successful from day one. You could do that.
But how long lasting is that?
Yeah. So, you know, you got to have some deep pockets and you have.
There was a time where you launched a brand, Sen, at a higher price point. So can you talk about that journey and why that happened and what happened with that brand?
Yeah. So look, bottom line is if I'm selling store A, right, which is a mid-range store, the high-end store is not going to buy from me. And in order to grow the business, you want to reach more stores. And the problem is if you're maxed out at the store range that you're in, you need to either have another brand or another men's line or kids line or something that opens up more doors if you want to double your business, for example.
Yeah, not compete with your current business.
So not compete with yourself. So the idea was to come up with a higher end brand. We named it Sen because I thought it was a great name. And I was hoping Sanaya would, you know, want to jump into that after school or whatever. But she never kind of really had too much interest in that.
you always want what you can't have when you're a young teenager.
But it was great. And it started off really strong. We did hire another designer, John, who's spent the last 12 years with us. And he was very, very good. So we kept that going for about 10 years. But you know what happens when you try to do multiple brands, really the ideas are the same ideas and everything starts looking the same. This is $80 wholesale and this is $40 wholesale. And sometimes it's exactly the same thing. It's like, but the higher end customer will only buy it if it's $100. They're not interested in it in 40, even though it's the same exact thing. Mm-hmm.
So it
was so much effort. And at some point after Corona, I kind of decided that, you know what, I should only focus on one thing. You know what I mean? And actually, you know, we always quote Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins taught me something in one of these things, seminars we went to, that if your business is not positioned to sell it to somebody, that means you're just an employee, basically. Like if your business, you know what I mean? You need to always build your business in a way where you can package it and sell it for a lot more money.
Yeah.
Right. So now if I'm going to have all these brands, how is that helping that cause? Because it's not, you know, I should really be focusing on the one brand, making that as strong as possible. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Everything else is a distraction because you still have to design all these items. You still have to do catalogs. You still have to do all that stuff.
Okay. So since most of our listeners are on the younger side, they're mostly like millennials and Gen Z, what's something that you can share with them, like a common mistake that you see with this generation, like specifically people who want to be entrepreneurs? Where do you see this generation kind of going wrong?
I don't want to quote something wrong, but the young generation today, I don't know that if they're being realistic. Mm-hmm. It feels to me sometimes like they expect things need to come easy to them.
Yeah.
Like it's very hard for them to deal with disappointment or with stress or with, and I think people, this generation is looking more for a salary. Like they want to know that they, you know, they have an income, but the entrepreneurship, I mean, I know it's there. I think people get discouraged. I think they look at businesses and stuff like that. And for them, it just seems like so overwhelming that you can't even go there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And also, I think a lot of people look for positions like in Amazon and positions in
the
Google,
corporate world.
Positions, but nobody's looking to, you know, it's not cool to open up a laundromat. You know what I mean? But you could make a lot of money in a laundromat.
Yeah.
People get rich off of stuff like that.
I think like society has just like trained this generation, even the one prior to us, to go to college and then get a profession from college and then, you know, like follow a specific path.
9 to 5.
Lately, like 9 to 5, more security. But lately I've been seeing on TikTok a lot, like people that are like buying a nail salon or buying a laundromat because they're seeing themselves making money as a side hustle. And so I think it's slowly going to start coming back, but people are more referring it to it as like side hustle, passive income. Mm-hmm. And passive income is like a big topic that a lot of people in our generation are now talking about as if they're discovering it now for the first time because everyone was just so trained to go get a full-time corporate career after college.
Yeah.
people, the word passive income is something very important. Most people are just chasing a salary, the paycheck to pay the rent and to pay the car and to pay this and to pay that, not looking into creating income. You know what I mean? People go buy a $100,000 car instead of put a deposit on three apartments and rent them out. And those three apartments, 10 years down the road, could buy you three cars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's something people don't look at. People look at today.
Yeah.
I just want to add that, like, something that our generation is also always talking about, and also, like, we're all complaining about, is that, like, the cost of living has just increased tremendously. And it's so expensive to just rent an apartment, work, and live your life compared to, like, what it was. Like, buying a house today is nearly impossible. Like, if you look at the stats, people are not buying houses. They're not buying property. They're just going to travel because they're like, it's so unreachable to think that I'm even able to afford to buy a property. And like, these are the numbers that are coming out, at least in the US, that I've been seeing on reports.
No, 100%. I agree with that, but it's not impossible. Otherwise, the pricing would go down. So don't forget, when we were 30 years ago, even though the house cost $200,000 and not $1 million, but $200,000 was a lot back then too. You know what I mean? Like, I remember,
that's true.
I remember when I got married and I heard somebody had a house for $350,000. I've never heard of any such a thing in my entire life. Okay. Like, and today, you're lucky if you find a house for $350,000 of any condition.
Something my dad has always taught us is just like, never victimize your situation and like dwell on like, oh, but it's impossible, right? Because of the situation, or like, our brand is not doing as well because like the economy is down. Like, he's never putting himself in that mindset. It's always like, okay, that's not an excuse. Like, how do we move forward?
Listen, if I was Walmart, the economy would be affecting me, but I mean, how's the economy going to affect us? We're like a little
it's affecting us because, and you could say that, like, you know, people are shopping less, like, especially for luxury items and whatever. Like, you could blame like sales going down on external factors, but you don't. You're like, what are we doing wrong and what can we do to fix it?
Yeah, because again, if sales are going down, I need to look at what we're doing wrong and not from the outside, like we're doing everything perfect. It's always
but
within.
It's a mindset.
Yeah, it's your mindset.
It's a mindset that most people don't have.
You don't even realize it, but just something to point out.
Yeah. One more question, and then we're going to move on to our rapid fire spicy six questions.
Okay.
I think the last question for you before we move on to the last part of this interview is, what do you see as the future of Elon and of the retail industry? And is there anything you're excited about for that future?
Of the retail industry in general?
And Elon in the future.
I think in the last few years, especially since the girls are involved and we're vested into the e-com, my vision is to grow the wholesale part from where it's at, probably, I wouldn't say double, but probably another 50%. At the same time, grow the retail, which is the e-com side of things. I think that has unlimited potential to grow. And I think the two are kind of combined because it's while you're spending the money on the ads and the marketing of the e-com, you're also building brand name on the wholesale side. Mm-hmm. And I think once we grow that side, you basically have a captured audience that you get to understand better and know what they want better. And you know, just like I was telling you how it took us 30 years to build relationship with 2,500 retail customers, it'll take us 5 or 10 years to build a couple of million of retail customers. You know what I mean? And if you have that, I think you have a real business. And it's a real business that you could actually package up and sell to another company. You know, there could be a company out there who's doing 50 million and wants to do 100. And the only way they're going to do it is by capturing somebody else. You know what I mean? Or maybe we will capture somebody else. I don't know. Yeah.
The opportunities are endless.
But I got to tell you, you got to always be teachable. I don't care how old you are, how rich you are, how smart you think you are. I always feel like somebody knows better than me just by looking at.
Now, I agree.
It doesn't mean I'm right.
Same mindset.
It doesn't mean I'm right, but I always know that there's something to learn from somebody. And you never know who's teaching you, you know, who comes into your life to teach you something.
100%. I think that's great advice to leave everybody with.
For sure. And I can say, like, from like the decade that I've known the brand, I love the evolution of just like what you guys have built and the designs and everything. Like, I think that the brand has grown with me. Like the clothing that I wear with totally. Elon, I feel like it grows with me with like my age. And like what the Elon clothes I wore in college is different than the Elon clothes I wear today. And like, I feel like you guys are just always upping your game. So I'm very excited about the future of Elon.
Well, we have a motto here, which is not from us, but a business, it's like a plant. If it's not growing, it's dying. Mm-hmm. It's not just going to stay still. You got to constantly keep pushing forward, because if you're not pushing forward, you're not going to stay where you are. You're going to start going backwards.
Love the one-liners.
Wow. This was great. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the interview and I learned a lot about
Elon. I hope it recorded.
Me too. I learned a lot though. I know, Sanaya, you knew most of it, but I did not know a lot of it. So
it's still cool to listen to, always.
All right. So next up, we have our spicy six questions. We're going to rapid fire. We're going to ask you a question and you're going to answer it quickly. One or two lines. So Sen, do you want to start?
Sure. So the first question is, what is your favorite podcast to listen to?
Well, you guys are definitely my favorite, because I only started listening to podcasts when you guys started. You know what I mean? I mean, I do listen to sometimes to Tony Robbins podcasts and things like that, but I'm not doing it enough and I should definitely start doing it more.
Okay, good. That wasn't planned. So that was his genuine answer, folks.
Woohoo. All right. Question two. Who do you look up to in life or in business?
It's not one person. I look up to one person as a role model of a father. I look at somebody else as a husband. I didn't grow up with type of role model where I became like them. So I kind of always looked for outside role models. And I think I still do that till today. Like, I'll pick up what I like about specific people, but in certain areas.
So who's like, let's say, I guess, your current role model in business?
I really look up to Mark, who I work with. Mm-hmm. I really feel like he's the perfect match of what I needed here. Keeps me in a straight line and has a vision. He's very visionary, very smart.
Okay.
I think one of my gifts is putting the right people together, attracting the right people and being able to keep them.
Okay. I think that's a good answer.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you currently obsessed with? So it could be like a product. It could be, I don't know, a food, anything that's like your current fixation, if you will.
I'm obsessed with Poochkers.
Poochkers is my niece and his granddaughter, Leia's perfect angel of a human. She's my...
Definitely obsessed with her.
That's a good answer. Me too.
I love it. That's a perfect answer. Okay, what was the last argument or disagreement you had about?
Ooh. It's mostly arguments about if we should make this product or this group or that group. So now we kind of have a team, which includes Galit, which is my wife, and we have a few other girls that are helping in the design process. And yeah, sometimes the vision doesn't go in the same way. I wouldn't call it arguing, but
it is.
Yeah, but it is. Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know why, because I do need to listen to my wife more, for example.
Yeah, she does know it all.
But I do have a vision of how things work in a way. And sometimes it doesn't.
Well, I mean, it's a miracle that you guys have been working together for this long. So very commendable. Not everybody can do it. Most people cannot.
Well, we used to kind of work together, but each one doing their own thing. We're more together doing, you know. Bottom line is what we really take care of is that this point. You know what I mean? Like everything else, somebody better than me is doing.
Yeah.
Or is better than us is doing. So this is the only component that we really are responsible for.
Yeah. Okay, next question. What intimidates you?
Technology, I guess, could intimidate me because, I mean, I'm okay in technology, but I have my limit, as you can see, you know,
by
trying to connect to this. It's not intimidated, but I have always a fear of failing or a fear of, you know, I still live with that fear strong.
All right. And for the final one, what is a non-traditional piece of advice you want to give to our listeners?
You know, there's the cliche of follow your dream or whatever. I don't know about that. I think you need to find a way to buy your freedom.
Oh, I love that, Dad.
Freedom is like, that's what I appreciate the most about this travel or going here, is the being able to do so. You know what I mean? The freedom to being able to go and go away for 10 days and come back, and you still got paid during those 10 days. That's freedom. You know, the freedom to wanting spontaneously go somewhere and just being able to do it. It's such a great feeling to have that. That's really what I'm mostly grateful for, by owning your own business and being in that position. Because, you know, there's so many people out there that they go away for 10 days. For 10 days, they're not making money.
That was beautiful.
Or they have to find somebody to replace them or to do. No, so the freedom is priceless.
Alrighty. I think that's a perfect place to end. Thank you so much.
I
think people are really going to enjoy this, Dad. I think this was great.
No, this was great. Thank you so much, Elon. Hope you enjoyed our first interview.
Thank you, okay. Everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.